Hi, I'm Sylvia Menadi.
Hi, Sylvia.
I'm beyond nervous. I kept looking over there like if someone was going to come and save me, because I'm paralyzed with fear, and I know this feeling really well from a different life almost, and for very different reasons. I start from the beginning. I'm just going to tell my story like I was suggested to do. I'm Sylvia. I'm Italian. I lived abroad for a very long time, and over 20 years. It was only 4 years ago when I was in treatment that I realized that I left my country because I actually ran away, not because I wanted to have this, you know, incredible experience abroad. And that was quite interesting. It made me look at my life in a very different perspective and myself. My family is, I'm not here to badmouth my family. Obviously, you know, they did the best they could, and I'm very lucky to have a family. And in the last few years, I got close to them again. But, you know, for a very long time, even at the beginning of my using, we had no contact. And it was okay that way, you know. I had to grow and I had to become a bit stronger and have at least a couple of years clean time before seeing them. So starting from the beginning, they were, you know, growing up in northern Italy, it was actually cool, it was good. I come from a very nice part of Italy. It's quite wealthy and industrialized. Food is great, great clothes, you know. But, you know, there was something within my family that obviously, when I was very young, I didn't kind of understand, but then growing up, I saw. And that was the fact that my family is dysfunctional. My mom is absolutely lovely, but she is an addict. She doesn't act out with drugs, but she does with behaviors, and she's a loving sex addict. And her father was an alcoholic, and he died from the illness. So genetically speaking, I know where the illness comes from. My father does not have any of this, but he's an absolute control freak. But they're both very talented, and that was the thing. They had an amazing talent, and you know, my mum could play the piano, sing, draw beautifully, and she's a professional singer, and so is my father. And they wanted me to follow in their footsteps, but I can't sing to save my life. So you know, they tried to send me to schools, but it wasn't my thing. And, you know, it was painful because that was the time where they gave me attention. Otherwise, you know, as many artists, they are very self-involved. And the two characteristics, really, that kind of they have and they have shaped me in a negative way is that, you know, the controlling part. They are really, really terribly controlling. And to a point where me and my sister didn't have a voice in the choices we made in life. And this, you know, self-involvement, that meant that they always came first and we always came last. Like I said, I had a good home in the nice apartment. I went to school, I had clothes, not the one I wanted, but, you know, they did the best they could. And then, obviously, very early, I realized that my talent was dancing. I love dancing and I love music, and I told my dad, and I was 6 years old and I wanted to be a dancer, and he said no. And then I kept going on a few times, and then finally took me to this place, and I really expected to see the door, you know, the door opening and all these dancers, and instead he took me to a karate class. And you know, because he thought that I wasn't good for a dance. I don't know what he thought, but you know, he wanted me to learn to defend myself. And you know, I've got to admit that later in life I wish I'd taken those karate lessons, because I found myself in some dodgy situations and I could have used a couple of moves, but I had to learn to defend myself with, you know, with my mouth, which I'm also very good at. And so that was it. So basically the reason I say this is because from very early I had to compromise on what I liked. I couldn't do what I liked. And he told me that I had to do something else, and I did. And gymnastics, which I didn't like, but I did. And so basically all my life I wasn't able to voice myself, to voice what I really wanted, because I thought I was going to be completely shut down. And that's why it's been amazing, you know, like been in recovery, and especially in the last year or so, also with the Women Convention, you know, to finally find that voice within, you know. I'll get to that later if I've got time, but, you know, I just wanted to say it earlier rather than not saying it later. I am finding my voice, you know, many, many years on. So growing up, I was allowed to drink wine, lunch and dinner. I didn't really like wine very much, but it was always there. What I did like, and I found out around 13, was spirit, alcohol. You know, my first one was Martini Bianco, and I just loved the way it made me feel. And then obviously whiskey, and then vodka, and then, you know, anything I could get my hands on. And I was 13, and I used to go to what we call day clubs in the afternoon, and your parents take you there. But they actually serve alcohol to us. They couldn't have, you know, it was illegal, but they did. So I started drinking kind of every Sunday. And then very quickly progressed into, obviously, smoking pot. And I was smoking almost every day, 4 or 5 hours a day. The hours I was supposed to study, I just went out and smoked and with my friends. And obviously I failed a college, and I thought my father was going to kill me. He was very academic. And I got beaten for a homework once really badly. I thought he was going to literally kill me. Instead, he gave me money to go to Venice. I don't really get my family at all. He gave me money to go to Venice. And I remember I went there with one of my first dealer's friends, and I smoked the whole time. I don't even remember that day. But, you know, those were my behaviors really early on. And once I started, I couldn't stop. And, in fact, it progressed 16 years old, Class A. The part of Italy where I come from was unfortunately flooded with heroin. That wasn't my drug of choice, but I did it. Most of my friends during that time are now dead. The guy I was going out with is dead. His brother is dead. His sister also. 3 brothers out of 5. It's just, you know, an epidemic. And around the same time, I tried a different Class A drug, and, you know, and I found that it made me feel just so good. I just felt at home. I felt so peaceful inside, even though I couldn't stop talking. I just felt at home, really, just worked with my chemistry. But that drug was very, very expensive. So I couldn't really get my hands on it very often or as often as I liked. And so after a couple of years of doing just that, doing drugs that I didn't enjoy but kept doing it a long time, I ended up, you know, fucking up immensely. And someone got hurt. Someone got killed, actually, and my boyfriend's brother ended up in jail. And, you know, I come from a small town. It was on the newspaper, and it was pretty bad. And so I was sent to boarding school 1 year, and I actually quite enjoyed it, you know, sort of going away from the madness. I had a nice structure. For the first time in my life, I had structure. And then I came away from it, seemingly, and I thought I was a very strong woman because I, you know, left drugs behind me, and I was 19 by then. A couple of years later, I came to London, and it's just weird the way I work. You know, I came to London, I met new people, and I never told them about my past. I was completely anti-drugs, and that's, you know, I laugh when I say that because I really meant it at the time. You know, it brought me so much distress in such a short period of time. You know, so many deaths. We were so young that, you know, I just hated the thought that, you know, it could come back creeping into my life again. So I made sure that I hung out with people who did not do drugs. And thank you. And, oh, that went really fast. And that what I did. But then, obviously, a few years later, I went back. Well, actually, 8 years later. It took 8 years for this illness to manifest itself, really, in big time. I picked up again my drug of choice, and I used it for almost 10 years, and I basically almost killed myself. And I came into recovery completely broken, physically, spiritually, emotionally. I had no money. I had absolutely nothing. And I had a court case, and that's why I came in, because I thought, I'm going to stay clean around the court case, and then after I can go back and do it again. And I did actually relapse around my court case and after, but But I don't know, coming into the rooms and listening to people who, for the first time, I think what really helped me was listening to people sharing about their families. I thought that I was the only one with the crazy family. You know, in Italy, you just don't talk about it. You don't talk about abuse, you don't talk about, you know, anything. And to finally hear people talking about it, but, you know, in a kind of constructive way, it really helped me, and I kind of got hooked to it. And I wanted to get better. And that's why I kept coming back. And I did follow the suggestions. I did pick I've changed 6 sponsors in 4 years, but that's just me. And, you know, I keep attracting really controlling people because I come from a very controlling environment. I understand that now. And I had to do what I had to do. But I do work my steps. I do a lot of service, and I just really enjoy doing service. You know, it just takes me out of myself an awful lot. And I'm making a lot of nice friends, which is really lovely. People who want absolutely nothing from me but just have a good time and a cup of coffee and chat. And I try to be myself, which is not always easy because I'm not always sure of who I am yet. But it's becoming easier and easier, and I'm going to leave it there before he weighs me.